Nan sat on the edge of the bed with a syringe in one hand and my hand in the other. I didn't know it, but I had just made my last of 7 trips driving while ovulating across town to pick up these little vials of frozen hope from the FedEx office so we could inseminate before I headed into work. What the process lacked in romance, it made up for in spirituality. We looked to the cosmos and we said, "We invite you. If there's a soul who wants to come and walk with us, to be part of this family, we welcome you." And he did. I always wanted to be a mother, just not a wife. I was raised in the Apostolic Christian Church, where girl children were raised with the expectation that they would marry some nice brother who would become the protagonist of their story and with whom they would raise their own children to perpetuate that tradition. As I watched my friends, one by one, begin to marry at 17, 18, or 19 years of age, I wept at their loss and determined that I wanted more. I chose from a field of 2 acceptable choices, teacher and nurse. And upon graduating in 1989, I dedicated my days to instructing other people's children. Not long after, despite the scolding of church members, I became a foster parent. They felt that I was taking matters into my own hands and running ahead of God, and they cautioned me to wait for God's timing to have my own children. 10 years later, after I had educated myself out of any potential suitors in the AC Church and settled down with a nice girl, I was on my doctoral internship in Pennsylvania when I began quietly perusing sperm banks on the internet. I was full of hopes and doubts. Could I be a mother? What if I regretted it? Was I good enough? It certainly wasn't something that would happen by accident. One day, as I was stewing in these questions, I saw an image of myself in my mind's eye, holding a newborn, gazing into his face, thinking, "Wow, I almost didn't do this." After we returned home in the summer of 2000, we went for our first doctor's appointment with a studious little man who flipped back and forth through this thick file, avoiding eye contact with us as we talked. Later, I learned that he had another patient by the same name whose file he was looking in as we spoke. It's an amusing story now in retrospect, but at the time, we absorbed each of his comments in a jumble of emotion. "How long have you been trying?" he asked. "We haven't," I said. "We're just getting started trying to find out what our options are." "Well, you're so old," he said. "Why didn't you start sooner?" "We're just now feeling ready." "Well, at your age, you have about a 7% chance of conception, and with frozen sperm, you cut that percentage in half," he gesticulated in the air with his hands as if to say, "It's a crapshoot. Can't you get fresh sperm?" My mind flashed to me standing alongside the road holding a cardboard sign reading, "Will work for fresh sperm." "No," I said. "We considered that, but no." Needless to say, we took our disheartened selves out of his office and began looking for a doctor with a bit more hope. It may be an understatement to say that my family had some mixed feelings about my plans to have children with no husband. My brother stopped me at a family event to say, "We just want you to know that we're praying you don't get pregnant." I said, "Do you realize how cruel that statement is? You might as well come out and say, we're praying that your deepest heart's desires never are realized." I confronted my mom and my brothers and said, "There's no halfway on this. I will not have people in my life who tolerate my dreams. If you cannot participate in this process with unadulterated joy, then you will no longer have the opportunity to be engaged in my life. Period. You are either all in or all out." And then we found our sperm donor, a generous man who was willing to share information about his life and even agreed to meet any potential offspring when they turned 18. Having worked with so many children who longed to understand their roots, it was really important to me to be able to provide this to our children. just as meaningful to us was the fact that our donor wanted to know about us before he was willing to release his sperm from the sperm bank. He was completely unlike me, but so like my partner's dad and my dad, scientist and inventor. It dawned on me, I guess my genes will already be included. It's everyone else's characteristics that need to be represented. I was pregnant a short time with vial number 4. I got pregnant a second time, and after we had seen this precious little personhood beating on ultrasound, I miscarried again. The day of the DNC, the nurses in the Catholic hospital kept asking me suspiciously, "Are you sure the baby's dead?" Grieving and crying out to God, I encouraged this little soul to try one more time to get through. On September 11th, 2002, we inseminated. And about 10 days later, we met with a fertility specialist who said, "You have something in your uterus, maybe a cyst. If you're not pregnant, we need to take a look at that." The day of my dissertation defense, for the third time, I saw a plus sign emerge on the pregnancy test. I was ecstatic and also terrified that I would lose this little life again. The specialist put me on 10 times the amount of progesterone I'd been on before and monitored the fetus's development closely. He could tell by the cell division that I had conceived 5 full days after insemination. I was certain it was a miracle. Finally, on June 11th, 2003, he arrived by way of emergency C-section. The doctor exclaimed, "The cord is once, twice, 3 times around, and a true knot. We have ourselves a miracle baby." Well, our miracle baby is turning 15 this year. He came home from school a while back and said, "My friends think it's weird that I've never met my biological father." I said, "You want to hear something even weirder? I've never met your biological father." But in just 3 years, we will. We'll meet the man whose generosity brought my lifelong dream of motherhood miraculously to life.